Welcome to the Border Town Podcast, the Flood Series. On July 11th, 2023, a state of disaster was declared throughout Vermont as intense and widespread rainfall dropped up to 8 inches of water over a 38-hour period. This led to catastrophic flooding throughout the state and left the entire downtown of the capital city, Montpelier, underwater. The Border Town Flood Series will introduce you to some of the small businesses, community members, and government officials, anyone in the community that is collectively experiencing this disaster. Today on the podcast, we welcome Tim Heaney, principal broker at Heaney Realtors. But all these storms I know will weather, all these storms will ride together.
Tim Heaney, I've lived in Montpelier all my life. Came back in 1981 after I graduated at UVM and joined my dad in the brokerage firm that he and my gramps started in the mid-1950s. And I've worked there ever since. We live in downtown Montpelier on Main Street. My family owns a number of properties here that, being the member of the family that lives in town, I get the privilege of taking care of them. So,
yeah. If you could, just before the flood, a typical day in Montpelier for you, what's it like in downtown Montpelier?
It's quiet. It's nice. It still is. I'd get up, go for a run. Whether it's out to Three Mile Bridge or up through Hubbard Park, or, you know, it's just amazing. You don't have to get in your car to have a great outdoor experience here. And I could walk to work some days if I didn't have a morning appointment, or drive my car, either way. But, you know, everything was moving smoothly. It was active. It's still, you know, just it was amazing. The economy's been great. And even nationally, you're hearing stories about market starting to adjust and shift, especially in real estate, which is what we do. It stayed really, really strong here.
I think it will remain too, against all odds probably. But
well, it's supply and demand, right? And there are people that really want to be here and be part of the community, and there just aren't enough homes. So
if we could, on July 10th and 11th, which is now a little over 2 weeks ago, just explain your experience.
The weather warning started coming in. Everybody was paying attention, and some tenants actually asked if I thought their spaces would get wet, and I said, no, it's never gotten to that point before. So I gave a few people bad advice, but we did get notices out to all our tenants on Spring Street, over by the Spring Street Bridge. Those are some of our properties, and so literally everyone there did move their cars up to the upper lot, so we didn't lose any cars there, which in some previous events, people have lost their cars. Did that kind of... we were at home after work, and a friend who's an architect came over and was reviewing some plans for a project we're working on. And when he went to leave, the water was up to the floorboards on his car. And that was our first clue that, oh my, we are in trouble.
And where was that? At your house?
At my house, at our house on Main Street. Yeah, we're right beside the inn at Montpelier, so we're kind of right in that section. Don and I furiously just went through, and anything we could bring upstairs, we did. So we rolled up all our rugs. We brought all the small stuff. We didn't bring the major pieces of furniture, but we got a lot up, and thinking hopefully it'd be unnecessary, but we're so glad we did.
And did you sleep that night?
You know, I sleep. I'm one of those people, regardless.
Yeah. And so your house got impacted too.
Absolutely. Yeah. The next day, going around checking properties, I kind of walked the tour in the highest rubber boots I had, kind of doing the back lots to get around downtown and check out each of our properties. And I've helped the Beards manage the Savoy building for years, and I was heading down to see that one. And on the bridge, the bike path bridge, a couple of people standing there. Turned out one was a New York Times photographer, and we started talking. And he kind of followed me back through town, and we talked a lot about Montpelier. But when I was down there, it was astounding. The railroad bridge beside the pedestrian bridge was underwater. I've just never seen anything like that. Came back through, met Madonna. She came over. We couldn't see our house. We couldn't get close enough to get a sense. Some friends were up on Cliff Street and looked down and said, it looks like the water's at least up halfway between your first floor windows. And we couldn't get an angle to see it. So we were down at the roundabout by, you know, on Main Street, and Ben Cheney was out in his canoe, so he offered to bring us in. So he literally canoed down Main Street with us in his canoe and up our driveway and across our what would be our back sidewalk, and left us on our back porch. And that's when we first got in.
And obviously nothing, well, we saw Irene 12 years ago, but this was beyond that.
Yeah, Irene wasn't anywhere near this. The last storm like this was 1992, which I was also here for, but it didn't quite hit this level of water. It was a different storm, too, because most of our storms have been winter, had snow or ice issues that caused them or were part of it. And the challenge is always immediately after is getting heat back on in buildings. This one's quite the opposite. It's too much heat, mold growth, and different issues.
Yeah. Yep. So then what have the last 2 weeks been like for you?
Nonstop. amazing people. I mean, I just can't tell you how grateful I am for everyone in this town who's just come out and helped each other, us and everyone. It's just amazing. It's why we live here. I mean, in the end, it's a great community.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, you know, we're Barry Montpelier, and there's talk of Montpelier having the, perhaps it's the geographic proximity or the social tapestry, but I do want to keep in mind that our neighbors in Barry are also impacted.
Yeah, I know Barry well, too. We have an office there. I sold our brokerage last June, and I still talk like it's mine, but it's not. But just talking with agents and our team over there, I mean, this storm affected them very differently than Montpelier. It wasn't apples for apples. I mean, I think really their downtown, they had some seriously wet basements and issues, but not like this. Their stores didn't, I don't believe, have many didn't have water up into the stores. Most of their damage, and it's heart-wrenching to see it, is in the north end of Barry from like RK Miles North. And that sadly is a neighborhood with less expensive homes, and I think a lot of folks who probably have less ability to deal with this kind of thing. So it's tough.
Yeah. So thinking about here downtown, I know every building's different, but is there a way to kind of summarize what each individual occupant is up against? Like, well, how would you describe the renovation requirements ahead?
I really hope, and we talked about it a little last night at City Council meeting, but I really hope that we can obviously do the right things and move toward making these changes. We need to make them. But I think they need to be made thoughtfully. Each building has different challenges and issues, and we can work through it, but time has to be allowed for it. You know, your typical homeowner, like people say you can't put a new furnace in, and someone at the meeting last night said, just put in heat pumps. They don't take that kind of space. And I'm thinking, okay, but my experience with heat pumps, this building included that we're in right now, is even though we updated, or my dad updated it with circuit breakers and all, the electrical services weren't designed for that kind of use. There's not enough capacity. It's going to have to all be rewired. So it's not just a new heating system. It's going to kick you into also in complete new, you know, rewiring. And if you're going to be asking people or expecting them to do that, we've got to find ways to help them do it. Because I think a lot of people just won't have the financial ability.
Yeah, it's one thing to talk about this design for resiliency moving forward, whether it's in town or upstream, right? There's a lot of work upstream to keep the water in landscape higher.
Right.
What can you talk about that with the ideas of what, you know, idealistic visions and realistic progress? What's your thoughts on where we can go from here if this is going to be a more common affair?
I mean, I think all we can do is give it our best shot, and we really have to apply ourselves toward it. We have some properties. We already were thinking about steps before this. It's not like a new idea. This will certainly pick up the pace a lot. And with flood issues, like on some buildings where I've got beams all exposed that weren't before and places I can rerun wires now, it makes a lot of sense to get going on this as soon as we're stable. But, you know, for the overall community, I think we have to find a way to pace it. And we really do have to find some sources of funding. I know for property owners, most of the money available that I'm seeing or hearing about coming out of this is geared toward homeowners, so that's good. And also a lot of it's aid for tenants and businesses. There's really nothing that I'm seeing for people that actually own commercial buildings. The only thing is really the federal, SBA mortgage loan.
Oh,
it's,
right.
It's a little lower rate than a commercial bank, but it is a non-recourse mortgage, so...
There is a lot of sympathy, and there was volunteer work towards the tenants and the businesses that we love so much. Mm-hmm. But from your angle as a business owner, because they now can wait for the business to be ready again for them to occupy. So a lot of the burden goes to you to repair that. How is that landing on you, and how, what's the path forward? How are you going to find those resources?
You know, it's been magical in terms of at least the first four businesses we've got starting up right now. I mean, we've had sheetrock delivered yesterday and today to the first four. So we've got them dry enough at 2 weeks. The moisture meters are down where they should be. You know, you've got Incognito, the little beauty salon behind 79 Main, will be one of the first. Bear Pond Books, we've got a team in there cranking. And we had to strip multiple layers of flooring and walls out of there. So that one's coming online. Vermont Dog Eats has also got a team in it. And Bailey Road. So that's our first four. And they all had contractor relationships. So I've been happy to work with their people. And so we will work with their people and pay for the our part, which is getting the four walls and the floor and the electrical systems restored. And then everything they do inside that is theirs. Yeah.
I certainly wondered about that, because it seems over the, since the pandemic, really hard to find contractors. Oh, what do you think? Is it going to change now? Are they available? Do you have any idea?
I've been calling. It's really hard. I mean, the person in Bailey Road, they're fabulous. They know Sarah, so they're helping her out. And I said, you know, if you've done this and you want more work, I'm sure we'd love to keep working with you. And he said, I'm 35 jobs behind before the flood. So you're right. It's a thing. I talked to people up in Chittenden County, trying to just reach around a little further to see who might help.
And I had a specific question, because I've been helping kind of shovel some things out. Some floors have been torn out, and I've noticed some have not had to be. What is the telling factor that says whether you need to rip a floor out?
I mean, bottom line is, it's the ones that haven't been torn out are a tenant or a property owner who really, for some reason, has an affinity for that floor and wants to try to save it. Barring not having that for anything we've got, we're tearing them out, including our house. I really was hoping we could save them. They're beautiful oak floors. But after a few days, they started to buckle, and the insurance guys just said, yes. And they were right. When they came up, there was a lot of moisture still under them.
Yeah. I was in New Orleans post-Katrina, and they said anything that was in the flood is no longer viable. I don't know what the word is, because I have a friend whose home is on the North Branch, and we're looking at some things, and should we not? Is there any kind of fine line, or is it up to the person is it nostalgic in some cases?
There's still decisions. I mean, a lot of, like, for us, the decisions are, a lot of these stores in different periods of time, in different eras, had lower level basement retail space and offices, and there was a lot of framework, a lot of structure under below grade. We have removed all of that. It's because to restore it to meet the current codes, all those old 2x4 walls that were built inside the basement and those old wood floors that were sitting on the old concrete, they were going to have to scrub them, clean them, and seal them, and remove any nails or screws in them from the drywall or whatever material was on them. So when you look at the labor to do all those steps, it just made more sense just to remove them. So we're back to stone walls, concrete floors, and we're telling people, you can't store anything here anymore.
Yeah. Well, some of the cases when you're pulling up the wood flooring, is it advisable just if you're getting to cement or even pouring cement? I mean, thinking that this may be a reoccurring event, what do we do with the, you know?
That has not come up for me yet.
No.
Good question. But most of ours are, you know, elevated wood structures on old timbers. Yeah, I mean, we've hit a few where we're pulling them up and we found asbestos tiles, so the job stops and we have to bring in environmental folks. But for the most part, it's clean pull, just a lot of wood, layers and layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know there is a lot of GoFundMe and there's community support for some of the commercial businesses, but is there anything folks can do for you directly? I mean, what kind of help is there available for you? Or, I mean, people listening, is there any support you can get?
I mean, at this point, it's little things. We're trying to make the people that are still in our properties comfortable while we prepare the ones that can't be in yet. So, I mean, if anybody's available to just help out, even if it's just hosing the sidewalk on Main Street where all the big piles were removed, it's so smelly. Mm. You know, little things that, you know, you don't have to go down in the basements anymore and muck through and carry out the buckets of mud.
Yeah.
But it's at least a lot more civilized to be able to do a pressure washer or hose. I mean, there's a lot of that we could use help with. Restoring after that, we're still figuring out.
Yeah. And as far as that wave of volunteers that came in, a lot of that work was the mucking and the removal.
Oh, gosh.
And a lot of that's now, gratefully, pretty quickly being removed from the streets as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the need for individual, like, manpower, is that on the decline?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the first days when we were putting our family up, there's seven of us from our 10 that came down the first weekend, and my brothers and sisters came from all over and joined all these other folks, and we were like trying to clean out. And our big focus was on the properties with residential tenants that were still in their spaces. So, some of the buildings that were commercial, we just couldn't jump on quite as quickly. Yeah.
From a real estate perspective, or like the quality of the buildings, does an event like this impact long-term viability of buildings? And I mean, is there anything you speak to that, or is that a question in your mind still?
I think they'll be viable. I mean, there have been changes, obviously, since the pandemic. You know, we're all looking at, you know, office use is a lesser demand, residential's higher. There are changes we were thinking about and starting to make anyway. This will help. And there are some, there certainly will have cleaner basements, so they'll be more appealing. I think, you know, flood insurances will absolutely increase. Some of the cost to operate will go up because of that. So maybe financially they won't look as solid as they did before.
But. Yeah. And we talked a little bit over the last couple of minutes about the future and the resiliency and the design. I mean, kind of wrapping up, are there thoughts, and you said you talked about it last night at the city council meeting. What are some of the ideas or thoughts more broadly?
I mean, certainly it comes up in every conversation that the buildings downtown that weren't impacted were all the newer buildings were built to code. So anything built since the 80s that's at least 1 foot above base flood elevation, all the new ones like the Transit Center started out at 2 feet above base flood elevation, none of them got wet. You know, they don't have basements and they build up, they put in the right systems. You know, that model is fabulous for future. I think the challenge is how do we deal with all the old buildings that they're not energy efficient, they're built at lower levels, you can't jack some of these things up. It's just what steps can we take to at least get those utilities up high? Like this building, my dad did it years ago. The electrical panels, it's all on the second floor. But you just have to work with each building. And that's going to be the challenge is how to, you know, heat pump systems will be interesting. I think they're a possible partial solution. They still don't do quite as well when you go below 20 degrees Fahrenheit, so you still do need a little backup for those times. But we should be able to get our reliance off fossil fuel down a lot.
Yeah. Well, as an active member of our community, yeah. and we're certainly responsible for a lot of the real estate. And how do you see the next? You know, we've kind of the summer's a little impacted, certainly tourism and getting into leaf peeping. How do you hope to see the next couple of months unfold?
Well, I mean, real estate, you know, people out above the waterline, as we say, you know, their lives are normal and it's just still moving along really fast and well. So the brokerage hasn't taken a pause, which also happened to us in the pandemic. We had one brief pause where we were closed for a month or two and then people just started coming to Vermont. Yeah. So I think it'll continue to be very positive and people want to be here. The downtown, it's going to take longer, certainly, you know, a year from now, we'll still probably be talking about projects. But I do think in the next short run, you know, the next 60 days, when people come back, if they haven't seen it since 2 days ago with the giant piles of rubble in the streets, it'll look good.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. I know you're busy. Thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome, Vic. Right. Thank you.
Thanks to Tim Heaney for taking the time to chat today. To offer financial support for flood relief in Montpelier, please visit montpelieralive.com. Thanks to Ward Joyce for allowing us to use his downtown office to record. Visit wardjoycedesign.com. And to learn more about Bordertown, visit bordertownonline.com.